Facebook.
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 Facebook. It's like jail. You do your time writing on walls, getting poked by people you don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like it. I like it.
This is
About Face
Radio.
I'm Betty White. Listening to the Philip D. Blackman Show makes me moist. Grab your tissues and enjoy the show.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Philip D. Blackman, host of the Philip D. Blackman Show. Join me every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday right here at 5 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time. But in the meantime, friends, buckle up, get your mind right, and get ready for the fastest hour on radio. Thank you for tuning in. Let's get it started.
Listen up. The views and opinions of this radio show and podcast are prepared and provided by Philip D. Blackman in his personal capacity. The opinions expressed in this show are my own, and they do not reflect the view of this radio station, broadcasting platform, or any organization Philip D. Blackman is a member of. The material and information presented in this broadcast is for general information purposes only. Any and all media presented are the property of their respective owners, and its use does not imply endorsement or opposition to any specific organization, product, or service. Let's get started.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Man, welcome to another show. What a Wednesday. Man, if you're paying attention to what's going on in the news, man, you're going to see some stuff that is just a little bit kind of wonky out there. There's a lot of craziness is happening. Some is actually being covered in the news. Some isn't being covered in the news. But before we get there, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another Philip D. Blackman Show. I'm your host, Philip Blackman, and welcome to the fastest hour in radio. Representative Sheila Jackson Lee, a Democrat out of Texas, she has introduced a House bill that is going to criminalize the conspiracy to commit white supremacy. That sounds noble, doesn't it? It includes, however, the criticism of non-white people only, which influence an individual to commit a hate crime. So the legislation is called H.R. 61. It's called Leading Against White Supremacy Act of 1923. It was introduced this past Monday by Sheila Jackson Lee, and she seeks to provide and prosecute white supremacy-inspired hate crime and conspiracy to commit white supremacy-inspired hate crime. If that seems kind of hard to follow, then hey, you're not alone. So tonight we're going to be discussing the great Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee. We're going to be discussing her House bill and, of course, its natural implications on our nation's First Amendment. But guys, before we get there, I want to throw it out there. We are live right now on all of our social media platforms. I tell everyone, hey, if you want to tune in, if you want to watch the show and see the graphics, then hey, check me out over on Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn at The Philip D. Blackman Show. If you're in Twitter space or Twitch, just type in The PDB Show. And you'll find us, guys, to my affiliates at Raw Talk Online, IPM Nation, Pulse Talk Radio, About Face Radio, to all my listeners across those media platforms. Guys, thank you so much for joining me. And, of course, if you want to leave a comment or you want to participate in the show, social media are your great options, so I can share your comment into the chat, like Roxanne Kirby's telling me, hey, my battery might make it tonight. That's awesome. Or you can call or text the show at any time to the number on my screen at 409-245-9753. So again, for all militias across the airwaves, That is 409-245-9753. So to all my listeners across the nation, around the globe, guys, thank you so much for carving out a piece of your hump day with the Philip D. Blackmon Show, episode number 318. We're talking about the Leading Against White Supremacy Act of 1923. There's so many ways that I've envisioned how I was going to start this show. There's so many ways that I was envisioning, like, how are you going to cover this House Resolution 61, Leading Against White Supremacy Act of 1923? How do you properly set the stage for something just so unbelievably toxic? And a lot of soul searching, a lot of thinking, you know, wondering how can I properly cover this? I think we must just go ahead and hit it out of the park, right out of the chute. Let's call it what it is. Sheila Jackson Lee, you see her. For those of you who are tuned in, you can see a famous quote that she has been credited. It says, "I am a queen, and I demand to be treated like a queen." That's what Sheila Jackson Lee said, and which brings up a great idea, a great notion, a great narrative, if you want to think about it. Perhaps besides Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Sheila Jackson Lee, Democrat out of Houston, Texas, may arguably be the dumbest person in Congress. You know, she might actually be really just the dumbest person outside of Congress, but I digress. You know, if there was ever a global championship for dumbassery, right, this country, I think we could send her there as a representative and she would win gold. Leave her there. Because unlike Lassie, Sheila Jackson Lee just quite frankly would never be able to find her way back on her own. You know, when Enron, you might remember the great scandal of Enron. Enron actually, when they wanted someone to use as a puppet, they picked Sheila Jackson Lee. They wanted a woman who really didn't have, who didn't have a mind of her own, and they got it. Enron executives described Sheila Jackson Lee as agreeable, which is a polite way of just saying, hey, she's dumber than a box of rocks caught up in the hubcaps of a slow bus going the wrong direction on a one-way street in the middle of a flood. Give or take a couple words. But Jackson Lee's only qualification for sitting on the subcommittee of space and aeronautics was the space that was actually between her earlobes. You know, she visited JPL once and she asked if the Mars rover, that we sent would be able to show the flag that the astronauts placed before they left. You know, staffers, naturally, we've never been to Mars, but don't tell Sheila Jackson Lee that. Because the staffers were reportedly surprised that she didn't complain about the cost overruns of the Death Star. You know, I mean, we've been to Mars. What about the Death Star? She's seen Total Recall. She knows Arnold knows we've been there, right? But, you know, in February, Congress was debating federal spending. And Sheila Jackson Lee, as they were debating federal spending, she got up to make her contribution denouncing a Pepsi commercial as racist. This is who Sheila Jackson Lee is. Other things that Sheila Jackson Lee has denounced as racist include hurricanes. She said that a balanced budget is racist. She says Secret Service agents are racist. What is not racist? In July of 2003, Rep. Jackson Lee, now she's a member of the NAACP, the Congressional Black Caucus. She's an ardent supporter of the civil rights leadership, and rightfully so. We need those leaders we need those political leaders in our leadership. We do. But this is an individual who once criticized the weather establishment for their selection of names to which they want to christen a hurricane, right? Stating that, quote, all racial groups should be represented when naming hurricanes. She added that she hoped that in the future, sometime, the storm list would, quote, try to be more inclusive of African American names like Keisha, Jamal, and Deshaun. Can you imagine, ladies and gentlemen, Hurricane Deshaun charging toward New Orleans? Can you imagine the outrage? What are you trying to say? Hey, we're just trying to say what Sheila Jackson Lee wanted us to say. She wants Hurricane Deshaun. Let's give it a Hurricane Deshaun. But quite frankly, once that would happen, immediately the cries of racism would actually, truly is, it's her only life skill. I mean, in 2010, she tried to denounce the Tea Party as racist at an NAACP meeting. In the middle of it, though, she forgot the word for sheets, and she condemned them from wearing, you know, that clothing with a name. Yeah, you know, the sheets which is exactly what the most aggressive Congress refers to her. But not only is Sheila Jackson Lee voted against every single national security measure she could think of, but she actually goes out looking for dictators to support. She invited Assad to speak in Texas. She urged F-16 part sales to Hugo Chavez. She's called for an end to economic sanctions against Saddam Hussein. She participated in an event conducted by the Iranian regime group in front of a military action on Iran. She has the diplomacy, the foreign policy relations of her commander-in-chief as of right now. You know, she might be considered a walking security risk if she actually knew anything. You know, the AR-15s, they weigh as much as 10 moving boxes. They shoot a 50 cal bullet, and she don't know anything. And this is kind of what makes this all so conspicuous. In 2010, she got up on the House floor to celebrate the victory in Vietnam. Now, I'd like to wonder if I had any Vietnam veterans out there or anybody that was alive during that time, what was the celebration for the victory in Vietnam? I wasn't aware that we had one. But she also said, and quote, the two Vietnams, side by side, north and south. Someone get her a compass. Side by side would be east and west. North and south is top and bottom. But don't get caught up in the details. You know, there probably isn't a single member of Congress that's really truly less fit to understand how the government works or really what her duties are. I have spent a day with Sheila Jackson Lee tour in Houston. And man, I really wonder if she understands what her job is. You know, Sheila Jackson Lee, she was an ardent opposition to repeal Obamacare because it would violate the Fifth Amendment's right to due process. Now, if you don't know much about the Fifth Amendment, that's an amendment that has very little to do with the topic at hand. She may as well have picked out an amendment just by throwing a dart at the Bill of Rights. She would have probably gotten closer, but in one sentence, she proved that she has never read the Bill of Rights. She has no idea what due process even means. Even while Sheila Jackson Lee might know as much about the Bill of Rights as she does about Vietnam or what hurricane it is, she does know how to get attention. And that's one thing that I can say that I've actually witnessed her draw power, her star power. People come out of the woodwork in Houston, Texas to see this woman. I've witnessed it. She has that ability to say a lot of things to stir the emotion. Now, if those things create the emotion of anger and frustration, like what in the world are you talking about? Hey, it's bad press is still press. But before the State of the Union address, she makes sure to get herself an aisle seat. If you ever pay attention to every State of the Union, she makes sure she gets that aisle seat so she can be seen shaking hands with the president. But not only is she an aisle hog, she's also a floor hog. I mean, her hog floor antics got so bad, congressional staffers, they actually had a pool going at one time for the rare day when she doesn't get up to speak. Because someone has to denounce those racist Pepsi commercials and call affirmative action for hurricanes. Seems like a great way to invest our energy. But rather than trying to barge into the Treasury building or demand first-class upgrades to an entire row of seats for herself on airlines, these are things that she's done. Rudeness, errand, and entitlement, they're second nature to this woman. I have seen this as well. Her only achievement in life was to ride the sponsorship of the crony of the most corrupt company in America to a lifetime race card. Again, she wants you to know, I am a queen. I demand to be treated like a queen. You know, maybe that she knows so little about our government that she actually thinks that she was elected to be the queen. Maybe that's true for her. But I would probably argue that maybe she's a little bit more on the lines of queen of racism. Because racism is her answer to every single thing that's out there. If there's a problem that can't be solved by crying racism, Sheila Jackson Lee's never heard of it. I mean, she's the dumbest woman in Congress who began her career serving a corrupt corporation and has a 3% rating from Citizens Against Government Waste, who can't tell a planet from a satellite, who doesn't know what the Bill of Rights says and uses her position to denounce commercials that she doesn't like from the House floor. Can she really even be in Congress? I mean, of course she should. For the $174,000 that we pay the Congresswoman every year, I mean, the least we can do is get back a little bit of entertainment, and she provides a lot. So Zach Clark's asking, what is that mess on the top of her head? Zach, If you're not sure, that mess that's actually hair. She has some very very unique hairstyles. We can't attest. Billy Painter says that that lady is no different than Crazy Joe. It kind of makes you wonder. Yeah, absolutely. But she has a very unique history of racism. If you ever paid attention, that's kind of why we're starting this off by laying the foundation of who she is. She has a very unique history. And her antics, they make her an embarrassment, not for the state of Texas, but for the House of Representatives. Sheila Jackson Lee's just given us another great example of her extreme ideology in this latest bill that she's introduced targeting white supremacy by title. Targeting white people on purpose. So what I want to do, guys, I want to cover this in this latest development, in this opening segment, The Breakdown. All right, guys, so looking here, okay, you know, since I don't watch the mainstream news, I mean, there truly is, there's a lot that I miss out on time to time. I usually see it in the news feeds, either the next day or the next week. But this one right here is what this one, this story, I mean, truly, House Resolution 61, this is one of the most unbelievable bills that I think that we could ever imagine that would be even introduced into our country, into our, as something that is legitimately, they're serious about it, right? But I usually catch up these news stories that, you know, usually a day or two later when some of the dust has settled down. But the story with Sheila Jackson Lee, man, it's no different. I'm not a particular fan of Tucker Carlson because I know this guy. He sometimes Tucker Carlson talks out the side of his neck. Sometimes Tucker Carlson puts out bad information on purpose. Even in his latest show, he did just the same. However, I believe there are times when Tucker Carlson has crossed the line. He's misreported the news in the past, which really cautions me on his journalistic integrity at times. But I will say that every commentator, including me, we all have a bias we bring to every conversation because those biases are what define us. No one is immune from examining a situation through their own unique perspective lens. I don't care who you are. I don't care where you are. Sometimes people agree with our observation and sometimes they don't. Political commentary, it is an opinion-based perspective. It's an audience. Or, you know, as an audience member, we gotta remember that there are differences between opinions and factual news. Sometimes it can be both with an opinion that's wrapped around the facts. Now, there's interpretations that are of the goings-on in our country, and that's what political commentators do. We see what's going on, we look at the facts, and then we give you the facts, but we also give you our opinion. Well, last night, Tucker Carlson, he did a segment on Sheila Jackson Lee, and he gave a stern opinion of this congresswoman. That is his opinion, with some facts wrapped around it. But now, due to the potential copyright infringement claims through social media, I can't play this segment as it was on TV, but I can read the transcript of the segment. And what he said was this. He said, Sheila Jackson Lee is famous in Washington for being a single most obnoxious member in Congress. Now, that's a title that, as you can imagine, has many contenders, but Sheila Jackson Lee stands alone. Don't you know who I am? She once screamed at a flight attendant in a first-class cabin on a continental flight. I'm Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee. Where is my seafood meal? That is a verifiable story. So in the 90s, during a visit to NASA, I told you about it. I was telling you about it earlier. Sheila Jackson Lee, she demanded to see the flag that astronauts had planted on Mars. Now, when they were gently informed that no human being has ever been to Mars because it's very, very far away, she flew into a rage. She accused NASA of racism and pointed out to her membership on the science committee in Congress. But I mean, truly, anybody could spend an entire show on Sheila Jackson Lee, and that's what we're doing tonight. But on Capitol Hill, Representative Lee, she's known as the queen, right? But not in a good way. But what's interesting is that nobody ever really talks about the congressional district that she supposedly represents. It is in inner city Houston. It is It could use some help. I mean, out of all the things that's going on in Houston, Texas, especially in her district, man, the neighborhoods, they're not bad, but they could be better. They need some tender loving care. The roads need some tender loving care. Much very similar to the same district that like Nancy Pelosi represents in San Francisco. It is in dire straits. Her district has a poverty rate almost twice the national average, all the usual markers of a civilizational decline. High crime, bad schools, low social cohesion, drugs, and now Sheila Jackson Lee, man, she served in Congress 30 years. But it's hard to think of a single thing that she's ever done to improve the lives of people who's elected her. She doesn't seem interested. I mean, instead, she's devoted her entire political career and her entire life into a single cause shrinking about white racism. Because racism, you see, it's a national security threat. They'll tell you that. Is it an existential threat? It is a national security threat, is what Sheila will tell you. Really, Sheila? I mean, really? I would love to hear the conversation about how racism is a national security threat. I would encourage her to speak very slowly. We all have plenty of time, but of course she will not do that. She's got no argument. She's got no facts. She don't even have a sincere belief in what she's saying. It's absurd, and she knows it, by the way. Sheila Jackson Lee doesn't want to protect a country that she despises from national security threats. Why would she want to do that? And that's the point. What she's doing here every day is leveling a racial attack. Tucker called it a blood libel against an entire group of Americans while simultaneously pretending to be the victim of attacks from that group. She'll say, "Stop hitting me in the face," as she is punching you in the face. It's a tactic by this point, consistently used by Al Sharpton, right? By the ADL. By so many others that you may not even notice it anymore, but it's disgusting. It's immoral. It's divisive. But to Tucker's point about the blood libel, because that's what it is. It's protesting the 2020 election result. They tell you it is the exact same as slavery. It's the exact same thing as the KKK. It's the same thing as murdering Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. himself. It's all white supremacy declares Joe Biden and this administration without even defining the term. Now, you may recall that, you know, when Joe Biden said white supremacy, ultra MAGA Republicans, you remember all that. And you probably dismissed it at the time as ridiculous as the rantings of a senile partisan. And of course, you know, in most cases, that's what it was. But you should also keep in mind that what Joe did not say, you know, Joe Biden, Sheila Jackson Lee, these political pundits, they're not saying these things by accident. It's not ad lib. It's not off the cuff. Joe Biden's staff signed on to his speeches. They wrote it. They read it before he reads it. And they wrote it for a reason. Because when the president of the United States identifies a threat to this country, his many federal agencies, the biggest in the world, they swing into action to neutralize that threat. That's how the system works, as Joe Biden's staff knows very well. So in fact, when Joe Biden likens you as a ultra-MAGA Republican to Al-Qaeda or to the Klan, it's not a small thing at all. It has implications. Sheila Jackson Lee, just last week, she called for the renewal of the Patriot Act. That is one thing that I've ardently been opposed to, hands down, because we've given away so much of our security in the name of terrorism to our government. She's calling for the renewal. She said in a quote at our testimony, she says, quote, "I remember after 9/11 when we all worked together to ensure the protection of the American people through the Patriot Act and dealing with FISA courts. We worked together because truth is important." Are we talking about the same FISA reports, the same FISA courts, excuse me, that signed bogus warrants for an unlawful search off of a fictitious document paid for by a political opponent? Is that the FISA courts we're talking about? I mean, isn't it kind of strange when you think about it? Why would Sheila Jackson Lee, a self-described liberal, find herself last week praising that secret government court that liberals, they once opposed passionately on the grounds that those courts could be used to destroy the constitutional rights of Americans without anybody knowing about it? Secret courts. I mean, liberals were against those courts, and now the chief liberal in Congress is strongly for secret courts. What's going on here? It's because those secret courts, they turn out to be a very effective way to silence the critics of the minority, of the Democratic Party. The idea is to silence those so-called white supremacists Joe Biden's always yelling about, not all of whom, by the way, are white. We've learned that you don't have to be white to be a white supremacist. Proud Boys, does that ring a bell for anyone? You know, you just have to oppose the agenda. And of course, you have to oppose Sheila Jackson Lee. She knows that very well, and that's why she wants to renew the Patriot Act indefinitely. And there's enough dumbass Republicans in serving right now that she may actually be able to do so, but Sheila Jackson Lee would, she'd like to go a lot further than that. See, Lee has just introduced a bill into our Congress called the Leading Against White Supremacy Act of 2023. Now, it's not an exaggeration to say this single bill would do more to criminalize speech, previously constitutionally guaranteed speech, than any other piece of legislation that's been proposed in the entire history of this country. That's not an overstatement at all. And to prove it, I'm going to read directly from the bill. Right here it is. Let me see if I can make it a little bit bigger for you guys. Right here in the bill, it says, quote, "A conspiracy to engage in white supremacy-inspired hate crime shall be determined to exist between two or more persons, at least one of whom published material advancing white supremacist ideology, antagonism based on the replacement theory or hate speech that vilifies or is otherwise directed against any non-white person or group," end quote. That is in the bill that is pulled directly off congress.gov. Nowhere in her legislation is the term white supremacy or white supremacist ideology is it ever defined. Of course, it's never defined. It's always left open. It's subjective. Anything can be white supremacy, but the bill does specifically point to something called replacement theory, white supremacist ideology. If you engage in either, you go straight to federal prison, possibly for a very long time, according to Sheila Jackson Lee's bill. So all that's required under this piece of legislation, which has not even yet, as of right now, been laughed out of Congress, all that's required is that your political opponents, quote, could, as determined by reasonable person, motivate actions by a person predisposed in engaging in white supremacy-inspired crime. So what would qualify as a felony under this law? Well, virtually everything. But among them would be pointing out the Democratic Party. The politicians, including Chuck Schumer, the leading Senate Democrat, have long bragged that they're flooding this country with immigrants in order to change the demography to maintain a political power for themselves. They have said it many times. They've written it. They've bragged about it on camera. That is the replacement theory. They're saying that you're not allowed to hit that out. But if you notice it under this bill, you would be criminally responsible for any violent acts of people that you've never met, and you would go to jail for terrorism. Now, what's most interesting about this bill is that it's very race specific. Nothing in Sheila Jackson Lee's legislation would apply to, say, black supremacy or murder sprees by people who aren't white supremacists. The massacre in Waukesha, for example. So that means the Democratic Party politicians, they can continue to say whatever they want with impunity. The First Amendment still applies to them, but not to everyone else who doesn't necessarily vote for them. That is the definition of tyranny. It's horrifying. It's a direct attack on our Bill of Rights, on our core freedoms guaranteed by the U.S. government for about 250 years. But we shouldn't be surprised by this, because it's consistent with what Biden has promised, and he's promises the day he got into office, his, and the promise that race-blind justice would be instituted. That was his promise, which is the entire foundation of the rule of law in the West, right? It's been for centuries. That's how it's been done. But the new model they want you to, you know, that maybe we're suspecting, I'm thinking maybe South Africa. We've done a couple of shows on South Africa. Billy Painter's hooked me up with some great guests. We've talked about South Africa. I think that is going to be our new model for the United States. It's a country we never talk about because no one wants to admit what's happening there over the last 29 years. But on the basis of that, Biden tried to allocate farm aid on the basis of skin tone. A federal judge blocked that plan, but it hadn't stopped the Democrats' part because no one's repudiated the idea. No one on the right has been brave enough to say, no, the federal government can never reward or punish on the basis of skin color. That is immoral, and that is a country, and that's contrary to American law. And because no one has said it, the Democrats, including Sheila Jackson Lee, have dedicated their opponents. They decided that their opponents are terrorists. They're terrorists because of their race. And once you're a terrorist, what do you do now? Well, what the government can do once you're labeled a terrorist, they can take all your stuff. They get to seize your assets. And it shouldn't surprise you that it's actually unfolding in the state of California. Always the leading edge of lunacy. Now, everything about what's going on in California, of course, is bad. It's wrong, not just in practice, but in principle. In practice, it sets up an incentive that the whole country is going to have to grapple with very soon. This is a prediction. You know, we've already been told that you can change your sex or your immutable characteristics just by wishing it so. Men can become women. Women can become men. So why then can people not change their race? Why can they not identify as a different race? We saw it already once from a lady who was at one point a chairwoman of the NAACP. She was white as she could be, but she identified as black. So you can't tell me that that is not one of these things that's going to happen. What's going to happen when people change their race, when they identify as a different race? This is not something I don't think they've really thought forward. I mean, that's a sincere question, and it's waved away as ridiculous by a lot of people, but we've seen it already. It's not any more ridiculous than changing your sex. In fact, I'm going to argue that it's probably the same. It's under laws like H.R. 61 that there's a huge incentive to change your race because you get paid for doing just that. What are we going to do as a country? But what's interesting and sadly, and it's sadly predictable, is that politicians in California and the rest of the country, they decide how they're going to loot the treasury in the name of racial justice. The communities are supposedly falling apart in real, tangible, measurable ways. What are they doing for these districts? People are dying. I read an article out of Axios that reports that carjackings in D.C., they've risen for the fifth straight year. That is the home of our democracy. It's risen for the fifth straight year. Crime is out of control. So instead of doing anything about that in D.C., the leaders are going, they're doing what Sheila Jackson Lee does. They're shrieking about white racism as if that's the problem, or even if it's a related problem. But of course, it has nothing to do with carjackings. As for actual carjackings that are killing people, making taxpayers leave D.C., terrifying everyone in the city, well, the D.C. City Council just passed a bill. They're in the district that's going to lighten the punishment for carjackings as well as other violent crimes. So that is the answer. No matter how bad things are going, hey, we can make it worse. We can lower our crime numbers just by making it not a crime. That's kind of the idea that we're seeing in a lot of these Democratic-run strongholds across our country. It's tyranny, anarchy, in the name of that system. It's spreading because no one is saying anything about it. Nobody's calling it out, and that's exactly what they do. Ladies and gentlemen, that's the breakdown. All right, so Roxanne Kirby says in the chat, she says that she is the biggest racist in Congress. She hates all whites and black conservatives. Absolutely. She goes on to write that the Dems can burn down cities, but conservatives shouldn't be able to have an opinion on anything. And that's kind of the point. H.R. 61 is a direct assault on the First Amendment, and that's the problem. But guys, we're gonna wrap up this segment here. We're gonna take a quick commercial break, and we'll come right back with you with the other side of this argument as far as why is this a threat to our First Amendment rights. Guys, stick around. We'll be right back.
They keep asking the same questions. I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News, and the White House keeps punting.
I am going to refer you to the White House counsel.
Spokeswoman Karine Jean-Pierre also referring questions to the Justice Department as a classified document probe continues after recent discoveries at one of the president's Delaware homes and an office he used in D.C., the White House declining to say whether intelligence agencies are assessing any potential national security risk. The president heads to California tomorrow after declaring a disaster over widespread damage from a recent string of deadly storms. Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin asking state lawmakers to take action as high schools remain under investigation for not telling students about merit awards until after a key college scholarship deadline had passed.
I'm sending legislation to our General Assembly today to make it mandatory that schools notify parents and students of awards, recognitions, and scholarship opportunities as soon as they know.
The state's attorney general has blamed a push for equity for the notification failures, which school officials have denied. A university in Texas becomes the latest to take aim at TikTok.
The University of Texas at Austin blocks TikTok on its Wi-Fi and wired networks, telling students in an email it is complying with a directive from Governor Greg Abbott banning the app, which is owned by Chinese tech firm ByteDance, on government-issued devices.
I think it's dumb because you can just, like, turn off your Wi-Fi and connect to your own cellular data, so you're going to have access to TikTok. talk regardless of this ban.
Student Amy Salmerin tells Austin's Fox 7 News people aren't going to stop using the app while others support the ban.
Fox's Christian Goodwin. The company has denied sharing user data with the Chinese government, but is facing a growing number of restrictions across the U.S. as the federal government continues a review. America is listening to Fox News.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody? Julie. Hey, guess what day it is? Oh, come on. I know you can hear me. Mike. What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
Ronnie, how happy are folks who save hundreds of dollars switching to Geico?
I'd say happier than a camel on Wednesday.
Hump day!
Get happy. Yeah. Get Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
All right, guys, welcome back. Episode 318, House Resolution 61, Leading Against White Supremacy Act of 2023 is the episode name, guys. 409-245-9753, 409-245-9753. If you want to comment or leave what you want to call in, that's the number, or you can shoot me a text or jump on social media. Guys, thank you so much for carving out your hump day with me. You know, it may have been Martin Luther King Day on Monday. And it was, by the way, I completely glossed over it on my show. I had a guest, a really great show. I got glossed over. So first and foremost, I hope y'all had a very happy and safe Martin Luther King Day. I hope all of you took time to listen to the I Have a Dream speech and to remember what that day was for. But one thing that I'm noticing is that Democrats, they're really not all for that content of character jazz that Dr. King was talking about. Because Sheila Jackson Lee, again, long in the running for being the vapidest member of Congress. Wait a minute. Did I just break a law? You know, she's introduced this legislation that could make it a political criticism of white people, right? That could make political criticism of white people. If you are a person who criticizes minorities, that could make you guilty of a federal crime. And only what can be called a convoluted mess, I think, is the appropriate word, right? The convoluted mess. The bill actually proposes that a white person who vilifies any non-white person and has their words end up on social media that's accessible by, quote, persons who are predisposed to engaging in any action in furtherance of a white supremacist-inspired hate crime, that those people themselves would be committing a federal crime. So, the new bill, as I understand it, and it's written in English, I understand English, it's only like 2 pages long. It aims to curb white supremacy and hate crimes because that's an existential threat. But it sparked concern for a lot of people that it's going to blow a hole right through the First Amendment. Let me explain why. The Leading Against White Supremacy Act of 1923, it would make it a federal crime, not just to commit a crime that's inspired by white supremacy, but to post something on social media that promotes a white supremacist views, and then if someone else sees it and then commits a crime, then both of you go. How much sense does that make? That's called conspiracies is where it falls under. Let's see if I can pull it back up. There it is. It falls under conspiracy. So George Washington University law professor John Turley, a guy that I respect, I love listening to his commentary. He actually wrote a blog post yesterday. And in his blog post, he said that he calls H.R. 61 a criminal hate speech law that would violate the core principles of the First Amendment. And it makes it clear that the accused doesn't really have to support or conspire in a crime. All they got to do is make a social media post. Now, much of the bill, it deals in making it a crime to commit conspiracy. That's where I have this right here, where I keep blowing up. It's a crime to commit conspiracy to engage in white supremacist-inspired hate crimes, outlining the elements of such an offense. Now, look, is white supremacy a bad thing? Absolutely. Anyone who engages in white supremacy or racist behaviors, there's no room in our society for them. So if you are a white supremacist, man, don't follow my show. Don't support me. Don't comment. Don't even act like you know who I am. There's no room in my life for white supremacy. There's no room in our country for white supremacy. But you know what? Quite frankly, there's no room in anybody's country or anybody's life for that kind of hate, vitriol, and venom of racism. But getting back to the bill, normally a criminal conspiracy statutes, it requires that there's two people or more that are working together towards the same commission of the same crime. But this bill right here, the reason why it's so problematic, for instance, is because it requires only one person to actually be involved in a crime. If another person published, quote, published material advancing white supremacist ideology, antagonism based on the replacement theory, or hate speech that vilifies or is otherwise directed against any non-white person or group, then they are guilty of conspiracy. So a good example, the guy who drove from Dallas to El Paso and shot up at Walmart, I think he killed 11, wounded a lot more. By the way, this is set up is not only would the shooter be arrested rightfully so for a hate crime, but if and that guy actually talked about how he was following this idea, this far right wing. They call it a conspiracy, but again, it's kind of hard to call it a conspiracy when the Democratic Party is actually going out there saying the same things that Republicans are calling them out for. The replacement theory, the idea is to bring in an unbelievable amount of migrants because they're going to be Democratic voters to change the outlook. That is what they're talking about, replacement theory in that's what I'm guessing they're calling replacement theory because they named it specifically. But the provision that we're seeing here on our screen, it's so broad that you could literally drive a Mack truck right through it. So first and foremost, the questions that I have is, what is a white supremacy-inspired hate crime under this statute? Because it's never defined. How about this? How is replacement theory defined? Because that shooter in El Paso, Texas, he claimed that he bought into the theory of the replacement theory. So anyone that he can say, hey, who you know, where do you hear about replacement theory? Well, I listen to Glenn Beck. I listen to Clay Travis and Buck Sexton. I listen to Sean Hannity. I listen to Tucker Carlson. I listen to whoever, right? Anybody that's talking replacement theory, by that shooter saying, wow, this is where I listen to my information. Now those people that he has named, according to this bill, those people that he has named can now be guilty of that same hate crime that he committed. He is the one who made the decision. He's the one who drove to the spot. He is the one who made the decision to pull the trigger and to kill these people. Now, was what he did hateful? Was it racist, racially driven? Absolutely. That's what makes it so despicable. But this bill right here, ladies and gentlemen, it is encouraging the idea that not only does that guy, but anybody that he follows, anybody that he supports, this same stupid notion of suing gun makers for crimes committed with their weapons. Why are they not going after auto dealers who are selling vehicles that people use to drink and drive and kill someone else? They're not serious about it. This is just a big joke. I mean, what is it? I guess getting to this replacement theory, what is it? Is it because what Democrats call replacement theory is a way to silence Republicans? It's what they're saying is that the Republicans are saying it's not replacement theory. All it is a reiteration that the Democrats admitting their aims to use immigration to influence elections. That's all it is. So the Democrats have called it replacement theory, and now it's a bad thing for Republicans or independent voters like myself to call it out. But further, the use of OR in Section B is important because it vilifies as a standalone qualifier. So what's the limiting principle there? If I post on social media that Sheila Jackson Lee is an incredibly ignorant, abusive person and has a long history of treating her staff like dirt, does that mean that I have vilified her under this proposed law? Well, by the writing on the screen, it certainly appears so. Then there's the conspiracy angle. You know, it doesn't appear that there's actually any requirement for two or more persons targeted under the statute to have any real connection. If someone commits a crime, if they commit a, quote, white supremacy-inspired hate crime against a person that I've likewise been politically criticizing, that same person on social media, even justifiably, I would now have committed a federal hate crime. This show is a federal hate crime if this bill were to ever even think about making it through the House. This law, if it were to pass, it would be used to quash a valid political criticism against any non-white person or group. The Black Lives Matter organization is a great example, because any such criticism could then leave those that are levying it liable to federal charges. That's an assault on your First Amendment. And forgetting that such would be a blatant breach of the First Amendment, it also exposes a wild totalitarian desire by Sheila Jackson Lee and those people who think like her. The bill says that a published message would satisfy the bill if it's posted on social media or any other way that has a likelihood that it would be viewed by people who are predisposed to engaging in any action or furtherance of a white supremacy-inspired hate crime, or, key word, susceptible to being encouraged to engage in actions in furtherance of a white supremacy-inspired hate crime. So here's the deal, right? The bill goes on to even say that it's that published messages, that satisfies the elements of a statute if a reasonable person would find it that it could potentially motivate someone with such a predisposition or susceptibility to act. So now what we're doing is we're taking the responsibility away from the bad guys and we're putting it on the good guys because it's their fault. But the thing is, this wasn't the first time that Sheila Jackson Lee introduced this bill. She tried it in June of 2002. She did it specifically after the mass shooting at the predominantly black grocery store in Buffalo, New York. And it's cited an example of how this law could be applied if it passes. Now, there's some people that are quick to say that Tucker Carlson in his criticisms earlier, that he should be held accountable for his talking points when they were allegedly found in the shooter's manifesto. The shooter's manifesto said he quoted Tucker Carlson in his replacement theory. So they're arguing that under this statute that Tucker Carlson, as a political commentator, he should be held liable for the deaths of those 11 people. I mean, guys, it's easy, or it should be easy to see how this is going to quickly go awry as the left would use it as a law, as a battering ram against each and every criticism that's said by a conservative that they deem as something is called misinformation. It assumes that the normal people, they can't read a tweet or other social media posts without losing control and committing an act of violence in response. That would be deemed a hate crime. But the bill also assumes that only white people are potentially say hateful things on social media. Hey, if you don't believe me, man, I will share my Facebook feeds with you guys. I'm telling you, that is a farce. But that is what this is saying, that only white people can be guilty of saying hurtful things. I mean, you may remember Sheila Jackson Lee for her great big push to secure reparations, right? And she's known for peddling grievance-based politics. This administration, they began to monitor social media and speech with their disinformation board. Once it got out, that blew up really quick, right? Because First Amendment rights came into play. Jackson Lee's bill, it's going to face similar scrutiny. And it's doubtful, truly, that this bill about white supremacy is going to go anywhere in the House now that Republicans are in control. But, you know, who's to say what the Republicans are really going to do? I mean, it didn't go anywhere when the Democrats were in control. Why? Because it's a bad bill. They know it's a bad bill. But that doesn't stop her from doing her job to try to further sow those seeds of doubt. This is just another example, House Resolution 61. This is just another example of the angry left trying to suppress basic rights of human speech against those who they disagree with. We're seeing it more and more, and until we stand up and say, all right, enough is enough. We're not going to take it anymore. We got to start calling out the lunacy. Until that happens, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to continue to see the gradual erosion and the gradual assault on your First Amendment rights. Guys, that is where we are as a country, and that is where it's going to be. I mean, what we're doing is we're turning a social media post into conspiracies as an escalation that no one should want. Because like I've said time and time again, guys, they're... The pendulum of power always swings. When the Democrats had the power, they made a lot of moves, they made a lot of decisions, and we saw and we're seeing the result. But now that we're starting to see that pendulum always going back to the other side, when the other side has power, what are they going to do? That is a question right there that I'm waiting to see what's going to happen, because I don't really think anyone can truly speculate just how far they're going to go, how much further they're going to go until they can truly take your free speech. Well, guys, we've come to the point in our show where we take a special moment to pause, honor, and reflect. Remember that we have brave men and women in our law enforcement spectrum who are out there on the streets right now as you're listening to this podcast, or you're watching this radio show, or you're listening to it on my affiliates, guys. There's brave women out there right now, brave men and women that are out on the streets protecting our streets while they're actively being protested against, while they're actively being assaulted because they chose a ministry in their life. their calling. That mission, that ministry, is to serve something bigger than themselves. Last year, 2022, we lost 229 members of the law enforcement community. That's 229 families that are going through their first year without their loved one at the dinner table because their hero answered the call from their city, from their state, their fellow citizens, for someone to please step into that role. Be our protector of peace. These heroes did that. And ladies and gentlemen, we must never, ever forget these first responders, these law enforcement heroes, their sacrifice away from their family, from their friends, their personal lives, their willingness to risk their lives for a perfect stranger. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to continue to honor our fallen men and women in the law enforcement community every show until people start highlighting these heroes' lives and sacrifices like they do for the poor, misunderstood criminal. This week, friends, we're going to take a moment. We're going to honor Riverside County, California Sheriff's Department Deputy Darnell Calhoun in this segment, End of Watch.
The Philip D. Blackman Show proudly salutes Deputy Sheriff Darnell Calhoun, 30, of the Riverside County Sheriff's Department in California, who was shot and killed on January the 13th, 2023, while responding to a domestic violence call. Deputy Calhoun served Riverside County for 11 months, and he also had 2 years prior service with the San Diego Police Department. The Riverside Sheriff's Association said in a statement, "Deputy Calhoun was a leader in the community policing, believed in people and his ability to speak to the community with respect. Meet them where they are in life, try to understand their needs, and work together to find solutions to the issues they were facing." To Darnell, being a police officer in San Diego and a deputy in Riverside was about making a community a better and safer place for everyone. "Our heart aches for the family, friends, and fellow deputies of Darnell Calhoun, and we ask everyone to take a moment to remember his selfless service." Deputy Calhoun is survived by his wife. On behalf of the Philip D. Blackman Show and a grateful nation, thank you for your service, Deputy Calhoun. Riverside County Deputy Sheriff Darnell Calhoun. End of Watch, January the 13th, 2023. Rest in peace, Deputy.
All right, guys. For every End of Watch from here forward, we're going to read the incident report for each one of these officers because I do think that we need to be more aware of what these stories are. Instead of me asking you to go look, I figured I'd bring it to you myself. So according to the Officer Down Memorial page, this is the report. A call taker heard the sounds of a struggle after an occupant of the home had called to report a child custody issue at the residence. Deputy Calhoun was the first deputy to arrive on the scene, and he was shot. Deputy Calhoun's backup then arrived and discovered him wounded in the street. The second deputy became engaged in a shootout with the subject and then wounded the man. Deputy Calhoun was transported to the Valley Medical Center where he succumbed to his wounds. Ladies and gentlemen, our hearts, our thoughts, and our prayers go to Deputy Calhoun's family, his department, his city. This is the second Riverside deputy that we've lost in two or three weeks. So, I mean, they're still reeling. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back with you on the other side as we cover down on one final thing. Guys, stay with me.
A judge. I'm Lee Silicera, Fox News. A Massachusetts man is formally charged with murdering his wife, who hasn't been seen since New Year's Day.
Prosecutors laid out what they believe is compelling evidence that Brian Walsh murdered his wife, Anna, including compelling DNA evidence, and as well as a series of incriminating Google searches that he allegedly made on his son's iPad. Brian Walsh sat in court today. Well, he stood in court. Actually, stone faced mostly. He did shake his head once as prosecutors detailed those Google searches. Searches like how long until a body starts to decompose? How to dispose of a dismembered body? Can you throw away body parts? Can you be charged with murder without a body? Investigators have not recovered a body.
Fox's Brian Yenis in Quincy. Brian Walsh was initially charged with misleading investigators. A $10,000 reward being offered for information on the suspects who police say shot and killed six people inside a home in Central California, including a 16-year-old mother and her 10-month-old son.
I do believe that the cartel is involved. I do believe that there's high-ranking gang structure involved in this. And the reason that I believe that is this is not your norm.
Tulare County Sheriff Mike Boudreau, two family members survived and are cooperating with police. The Biden administration says it does not know the cause of the helicopter crash in Ukraine that killed that country's interior minister and more than 12 others. Secretary of State Antony Blinken offered his condolences.
We stand with our friends in Ukraine in mourning their loss and recommitting to the efforts that we're making to help Ukraine defend itself against this aggression.
Ukraine's president, speaking at the World Economic Forum, said there are no accidents at wartime, adding these are all war results. Wall Street had its biggest pullback of the year, with tech stocks leading the way lower. The Dow lost 613, the Nasdaq off 138. America is listening to Fox News.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Really Stinky Breath Breather Outer.
Mr. Really Stinky Breath Breather Outer.
Though we'd never tell you to your face, you've got the breath that can stop a charging elephant.
Show us some mercy.
We want to hear what you have to say. We just want you to say it from way over there.
Keep on going.
What was it you had for lunch? A dead rat? A rotten egg? A turd sandwich.
Nasty turd sandwich.
Whatever it was, it just singed off my eyelashes.
Oh.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, Barnacle Breath, because you put the hell in halitosis.
Mr. Really Stinky Breath Breather Outer.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Red 88.
And now another priceless pep talk from Peyton Manning.
Heard you bummed about driving a minivan. It's okay. It's okay. Is it at least like a sport turbocharged minivan or something? No? All right. Here's what you're going to do. Take that baby out and paint some flames on it. Or get a cool decal. Maybe like a number 18 on the side or something. Yeah. You're feeling me. You love it.
Go to priceless.com for a personalized package you can send.
All right, guys. We are back. Say, guys, thank you so much for joining. Man, we have, we're just about out of time. All right, so, you know, here's the thing, man. I can't recall the first time that I ever heard the phrase white male, right? Especially when it was said, it was hissed as if it was some kind of particularly vile insult. But I know what happened when I was in the military, you know, where it used to be a shorthand way of just saying that, you know, I need to be silent, that my views are not welcome. You know, over time, I learned that to a certain set of people, there was something positively wrong with being a white person. You know, we were great privileged oppressors of history, and we are the great privileged oppressors of the present. So I want to wrap that show up on that thought. One final thing. You know, if you're paying attention to what's going on in our country, ladies and gentlemen, the law schools are in many ways incubators to the identity politics that dominate the social justice, especially the political left, right? For those soaked in the progressive identity politics, man, we're talking about skin color. That has now become a stand-in for virtue. It was impossible for a black man to be racist. It was impossible for a white person not to be. Any in-depth discussion of history had to acknowledge past injustice. It was tough to even talk about, say, Omaha Beach without the very next breath acknowledging the systematic segregation that was going on in the World War II era in the U.S. Army. But since my military days, man, I've noticed that our problems have only gotten worse. Now, the true cultural and historical demons, they are white, gasp, right? Cisgender males. And, of course, any white cisgender woman who doesn't appropriately check her privilege at the door. I mean, the ticket to white acceptability is, in progressive politics, it's a form of self-loathing, a constant attitude of repentance, not just for the sins of the past, but also for the benefits of your present, which are presumably enjoyed by only or mainly because of the plunder and exploitations of brown bodies, they'll tell you. But oddly enough, man, this self-loathing, it doesn't diminish the power of the white progressive. The movement is still chock full of rich white men and women. Indeed, they mainly lead the American left, if we're paying attention. You know, they simply purport to hate and mock white males with the same intensity as do their black friends. While there's no price paid by Harvard law students who to check their privilege, or by Silicon Valley execs who enthusiastically embrace the latest trends in identity politics, they and their families are going to do just fine, while the rest of America is not so fortunate. We're left in this odd reality in which white kids who live in trailer parks, they're somehow called privileged, while sons and daughters of wealthy black doctors, they're called oppressed. In which the legitimate concerns of white working class and middle class Americans, they're diminished as misguided at best. After all, they're privileged and they're racist at worst. But here's the problem. Progressives don't like to admit it, but identity politics, they work as the mirror image of white supremacy, compressing the extraordinarily rich and complex histories of nations and continents and cultures into one characteristic, skin color. For the white supremacist, white people are born, they're natural-born victors. For the identity politics leftist, white people are the natural-born predators. But actual history, it belies the stereotype. I mean, just take one hot-button example. The history of slavery since the colonial era, it's not just a history of Europeans and white Americans enslaving Africans, no. It's of Africans enslaving Africans. It's of Africans enslaving Europeans and Arabs enslaving Africans. And that's just the partial summary. Yes, brown people have enslaved white people by the millions. So should Americans of North African or Turkish descent check their privilege and believe that their wealth was built on plunder? Of course not. It's ridiculous. But when identity politics rule, racism and polarization, they thrive. There is no coincidence that we're seeing a resurgence in out-white, white nationalism. It's embodied in the so-called alt-right. And at the same time that America's leftist elite, they're decisively rejecting Martin Luther King Jr.'s dream that Americans be judged by the content of their character, not the color of their skin. When you decide that skin color is a virtue, then as the sun rises in the east, the other side is eagerly going to agree. When identity politics rule, racism and polarization, they thrive. You know, I've seen friends and neighbors, they've been tempted by this same mindless reductionism. You hear it whenever someone says, when do we get a White History Month? Or when is there a National Association for the Advancement of White People? Or why isn't there affirmative action for white people in the NBA? You hear things like that, but lumping the history of England with the history of, say, Ukraine and calling it white history is absolutely absurd. It's just as absurd as linking the ancient history of Ethiopia with the modern history of Liberia, calling that black history. The answer to misguided identity politics, it isn't more misguided identity politics. Indeed, race obsession obscures the far more important decision of culture. If you think, for example, that there's a single monolithic black culture, I want you to talk to a recent Nigerian immigrant who's experienced his own culture clash. Because even while they're surrounded by black Americans, they don't fit in. I mean, if there's one white culture, then why are there such enduring and profound differences between Germany and Greece? You know, there's nothing wrong with being white. There's nothing wrong with not being white. There's nothing right with being white. There's something bizarre about being proud of past accomplishments or repentant of past failures based merely on sharing a skin tone with an unrelated prior generation. You know, it's far more enriching and humbling to learn of our own individual history. When you learn more about the past, you realize how much we all stand on the shoulders of giants, but also how just a single lifetime of decadence and irresponsibility can sweep away the work of an entire generation. You know, I prefer to speak in terms of non-pride, but of gratitude. How can I be proud that my relatives came over on the Mayflower and stood with Washington at Valley Forge. I had nothing to do with those achievements, and quite honestly, I'd be hard-pressed to demonstrate the same courage they did back then. So instead, I'm grateful. I'm deeply grateful. I'm grateful for the nation's history, for our culture. A nation that through great effort and enormous sacrifice, they cultivated, they preserved principles of individual liberty and human freedom that have benefited billions of human souls. You know, we've always had this race problem in this country, but to deny our progress on this front is to deny our reality. It's progress, however, that's not inevitable that this political generation, in its mindless rage and commitment to identity politics, they threaten to undo the work of generations before. When one side screams that white is wrong and another side's going to scream that white is right, and the concept of an actual racial conversation, much less the notion of racial healing, is going to be a little more of a sad joke. I don't see the problem as primarily political. Instead, our nation is undoing its progress on race issues more in the academy, on social media, in Hollywood, than in the halls of power. Sheila Jackson Lee is trying to match that. Politicians are responding to our culture. They're not driving the culture. And we're driving our nation apart piece by piece from Facebook to 4chan. They're all just as guilty. The day when a critical mass of our nation cannot truly say and mean that all lives matter, that is the day that I believe, friends, we are truly lost. So, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to wrap it up. We are done with our Wednesday show. I appreciate you tuning into this show, seeks not only to provide that middle ground analysis, but remain consistent to the inconvenient truth that so many people refuse to see. Identity politics 101 is divisive in nature, and the longer we remain quiet and let these people behave like the lunatics that they are, until we start taking stock in our vote, until we start taking stock in who we're putting in these positions of power, we're going to continue to see the status quo over and over again. That is our job. We need to put a stop to it, and it's only us to stop. You can't ask congressmen, you can't kick them out because they disagree ideologically when you're the one who voted them there. So until next time, friends, thank you so much for your service and your patriotism to this country. Without our men and women in uniform, our veteran community, and great Americans like YOU, man, our country would be a very different place. We are the only ones who stand between freedom and chaos. And as always, friends, do not ever let your dog tags dangle on the dirt. Stay on your feet. Continue to fight that good fight against everything that's wrong. If you love your freedom, thank a veteran. If you love your peace, thank a police officer. If you see a first responder, man, give them a high five and a handshake. Tell them job well done, because they still went and did a job when everyone else was afraid to leave their house. So to all of you first responders, across all spectrums, guys, thank you so much. Catch me every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 5 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time right here. Guys, have a wonderful rest of your week. I hope this hump day hasn't been so bad. We look forward to catching you again. 5 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time right here. God bless each and every one of you. God bless the United States of America. Take care of yourselves, friends. My name is Philip Blackman. I'm out of here.